Good evening, everyone. Thank you all so much for coming, and also a big thank you to Victoria Hall, because it is such a great space and they've been really, really helpful. So this evening, I am not an expert in local government. In fact, I try my best not to be, because that's not my job. So I'm hoping that I will explain where I think we are in the process in the most normal person terms, because it's not something that I particularly understand either. But essentially, my goal is to map out the government's thinking, what we think the implications will be for us, what different stakeholders currently are proposing, and most importantly, I want to hear your views. So whatever you feel about it, what you think about it. As I said, I won't have all the answers, but I'm hoping you leave here going, okay, I get it. I see what's being proposed. I understand what I think it means. And most of all, for me, I'm hoping that I will leave with an idea of your red lines, what you're most worried about, what this means for you, what you want to see happen. I will say things are changing by the day. So we're sat waiting for a letter from government this week, which will tell us whether or not the elections in Leicestershire will be cancelled. Now, that may be Leicestershire, but essentially, if the elections are cancelled, that means that we've been put on a particular pathway, which, if the elections are cancelled, means our process will be moving a lot faster than others around the country. So when I say this is changing on a daily basis, it really is. So in terms of what I'm going to try and cover, as I said, what and why, the timeline, the benefits, concerns, who are the decision makers, what does it mean for us, do we have a choice, what next, and your thoughts. So in terms of what the government is proposing, so this is the biggest reforms to local council in the last 50 years. It's major reforms. We all know that local council is where actually people have the most contact with government, and therefore it's the most important touchstone. What they plan to do is to move away from what we call two-tier governments. So in Leicestershire, that's scrapping Harborough District Council. In Lincolnshire, that's scrapping South Kesteven District Council, Melton Borough Council. But they also want to scrap small unitaries, and that means people like us. And as they do the reorganisation, they don't want to end up with what they call orphan councils. So essentially councils surrounded by mayoralties and then essentially isolated councils like us. In their place, they want to create these brand new enormous unitaries, which have to have, it gets a bit more complicated, but a minimum of 500,000 people living in them. That was their original goal. In the course of the last 4 weeks, they've negotiated with the Treasury, and the Treasury has said to MHCLG that they're happy for the minimum floor to be 380,000. So it's a big reduction, but that's still a lot more than 41,000 people that we currently have. So as I say, Rutland has 41, South Kesteven currently serves 145,000 residents, and Melton serves 52,000. And the government has said that they will facilitate this programme of two-tier reorganisation for those unitary councils where there is evidence of failure, or where their size or boundaries may be hindering their ability to deliver sustainable and high-quality services for their residents. I'll come on to whether either of those apply to us later. But the be-all and end-all is not local government reorganisation. The be-all and end-all is what they call devolution, which is the next level up. They're not actually particularly interested in the local government reorganisation, that's why it wasn't in their manifesto. But what was is the creation of mayoralties across the country. So essentially the goal is they want to create big strategic authorities where you have one mayor. So probably in the end you're looking at about 10 mayors to cover the whole of England. So we really are looking at mass groups. And these combined authorities, as they often call them, will have enormous powers, particularly when it comes to planning. So essentially we scrap small unitaries, we scrap district councils, and we move that tier of government to essentially sitting above county councils. So you're not necessarily making lots of savings, you're just changing where it sits. So why is the government saying they want to do it? They're saying that the benefits are that decisions will be made closer to home. Now, what they mean by that is not what we consider closer to home, but as in, rather than Whitehall making decisions, taking more powers away from government and parliament, which a lot of people would be in fun of. However, as I say, those decisions could potentially, for us, be made somewhere like Glenfield, or worst-case scenario, be made somewhere like Nottinghamshire for us. We just don't know. So it's not local in terms of Oakham, but these councils would still have all the same responsibilities our current council does. So schooling, transport, adult social care, taxation, children's services, planning, leisure centres, you name it. Now, it is true that if you speak to councils across the country, they all want more devolution. But what they mean by devolution is more powers for their council. They don't necessarily mean scrapping to come into mayoralties. So, where we are is that areas who want devolution have to put forward final proposals by March. However, initial proposals had to go in by January the 10th, so they've already gone in. So government only wrote to councils in December. so it was an incredibly short timeline for them to put more proposals. But they didn't write to all councils. So Harborough District Council, Melton Borough Council, they never received a letter asking for their opinion. Leicestershire County Council was asked, as the main unitary in the area, and RCC was asked to give an opinion as the kind of neighbouring potential orphan, but not with equal authority to Leicestershire County Council in the response. So as I've said, in terms of the mayoralty, those authorities would be everything from transport to skills to housing, economic development, environment, climate change, health, well-being. And it is true that it would be easier for government to allocate money to regions because they'd say, here, Mayor, this is your money for the whole of the East Midlands. But as we say, decision-making would rest less with government, more with them. So in long term, many competences that will currently in the immediate move potentially to Leicestershire in the end would move to this kind of big metro mayor model. And to be fair, we have seen some successes with it. You know, I'm not sat here saying they haven't worked. Andy Burnham has done a really good job in his area. Andy Street has done a really good job in his area. There are others I won't name, but even next door to us, we've got some. And you couldn't tell me the name of the mayor and sitting here, actually, I can't remember his name either. You know, there are mayors around the country where they haven't made an impact. They haven't been able to make a difference. So it is a really mixed bag. So essentially, we've got two processes taking place at the same time. Now, devolution, as I said, is the government's priority. And Leicestershire and Lincolnshire have both applied to part of the devolution process. And by signing the letter that went to government, Rutland has said they're happy to be part of the devolution process discussions. But RCC did put in a red line, which was that local reorganisation has to be done properly first, and they won't agree to any cost. So as well as decision-making, the other kind of praise the government would give for the new process would be simpler structures. It massively enables housing. So obviously you've got one mayor making planning for vast, vast areas. And actually the minister responsible for reorganisation said last week, this agenda is all about tackling housing. It's about exactly that. And that's why areas like Harborough, of course, are so worried about being moved into Leicester City. There should be cost savings, arguably, when this happens, because you have fewer CEOs, fewer senior management teams, less duplication, and ministers frequently quote this report from PwC that you can save billions. But I don't really think the maths adds up if you're essentially saying, take away this level, but then create a new level up here, because you're ultimately still going to end up with multiple levels. And I asked the Library and Parliament to give me an assessment of this, and they said, look, the evidence does not show that there are savings always. Sometimes there are, but actually internationally it shows that when councils emerge, there isn't always more money saved. Actually, the better way is for councils to share procurement in different areas. So in terms of where we are, I touched on it very briefly. So we've had the first letter go in by January 10th, where RCC and LCC had to say what their preference was. I'll come back to that in a moment. Then you get to interim proposals by March, which is incredibly soon. Then detailed proposals in May, or if you're lucky, our goal would be to try and push it back to at least autumn. And then essentially they would have devolution deals in place by 2027, and we will be wrapped up by 2028 in our brand new models. So 185 councils moving into new unitary structures by 2028. However, I think that timeline might be slightly optimistic. So who makes the decision? The final decision is made by the Secretary of State, that's Angela Rayner in this situation. No restructure, any change to how we receive and benefit from local government requires the councils to give their consent. So the process they have created not only has not started public consultation, and there is no mechanism for you as the public to support or oppose this until the very, very end, which I'll touch on, but they've essentially said that they will legislate for councils who refuse to get on board or where one council is standing in the way of the restructure. In the past, there's always been public consultations, there's also been judicial reviews and all sorts of referendums, but as you saw from the timeline, there isn't one. Now, I've put in a written question to government saying, are you going to put funding in so you can, you know, pay for referendums in areas where clearly there's massive public opposition to this? And they haven't responded yet. Now, technically, we've been told, but again, the details aren't there because this is all happening so fast, that there will be a public consultation at the very end of all of this, but it will be on the mayoralties. It won't be on the local government reorganisation side of things. So you all might get consulted on, would you like to join a massive East Midlands mayoralty, or would you like to just join a Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland mayoralty, but you won't get asked about whether or not you want to leave Rutland and rejoin Leicestershire. So what does it mean for Rutland? So we all know they want to scrap small unitaries. We all know that they would consider us an orphan unitary, because everyone else around us has gone into unitaries and then ultimately strategic authorities. And we know that we're expected to join a council with a minimum of 380,000 people in it. And then on top of that, they'll put a unitary in a combined model. So what does that journey look like for us? We have lots and lots of neighbours. We all know that. But Lincolnshire is already wrapped up with a mayoralty deal. Northamptonshire just isn't even really a question. Then you've got Cambridgeshire, which is going in with Peterborough. And then, of course, we've got Leicestershire. So in terms of Leicestershire, that's obviously where we're presumably subsumed. We thought we would have more choice. In my discussions with Gail Waller, we thought we'd have more choice about what we could put forward as proposals. But they changed the discussion halfway through and said that now, when you form a unitary, they expect you to come on board and be co-located with your current police services, your fire services and health services. So if we were suddenly say, well, actually, we want to join Lincolnshire, we would be breaking one of the restrictions they're trying to put in place in terms of how we would do that. One thing I do want to just quash immediately, because a lot of people have worried about this, there is no proposal under which we join Leicester City. That is not on the table, and it is not for discussion. Whether in the end, as part of a mayoralty, we're part of a Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland mayoralty, that is very possible, but we will not be run from the centre of Leicester for our local council. So, in terms of what those options are that are available to us, if we look at Leicestershire and Leicester as the model, because that's what we've got to assume at this point, the current proposal that's gone into government is that we want, and forgive the language, a giant donut. So one unitary council for Leicester on its own, because they're about 380,000 people, and then one unitary council for the whole of Leicestershire and Rutland together, and we'd all be in together. And we've got no idea where the headquarters would be. It could be Glenfield. But it's not that simple, because Leicester City has to prove that it has the financial ability to grow over the next few years. It can't be just sufficient as it is currently. So Leicester City will expand its borders, and this is one of the things the County Council, Leicestershire County Council, said they were willing to see happen. As you can imagine, my residents in Harborough are up in arms. They are not willing to be subsumed into Leicester City for many, many reasons. However, that shouldn't expand to us. So LCC has put forward that proposal. It has been opposed by all seven district councils in Leicestershire, as well as Rutland County Council, who have written together to the minister and said, we don't want one giant unitary authority for Leicestershire. It's not going to work for us. So then the question is, if we were to move to having to move into Leicestershire, and it was to be two unitaries, should it be split into north and south or east and west? And there are lots of different arguments at that at the moment, and the district councils have commissioned research with Rutland County Council to try and work out what would make most sense. I think the only red line currently from district councils is that Melton wants to be with Rutland, however it ends up if this happens. But I'll go into more of these later, but the key thing, as I've touched on the slides, is that currently we have 27 councillors here representing us as Rutland. If we move into one giant donut, as I'm going to keep referring to it, we will have three people representing the whole of Rutland on that council. If we move into two unitaries, it's likely we'd have six. However, there are arguments we could make to try and increase that, which I'll come on to later. So status quo, obviously, is the other option available to us. And then putting forward an alternative, which you may have seen the Rutland Times, Gail Waller and I have both been working quite hard to see if there's an alternative we can put forward. The problem with an alternative, and knocking on doors during the election, I cannot tell you how many people in Stamford and the Stamford villages said to me, we wish we were in Rutland. And I've never spoken about it publicly before because I always thought, if that's what people want in that part of my constituency, I will wait, I'll see if there's a groundswell, and then we'll do something about it. Obviously, this has forced the conversation. But unfortunately, no matter how you cut it, and this doesn't mean we shouldn't put it forward as a proposal, the numbers don't get us to 380,000. So if we were to take the whole of SKDC, which is 145,000 people, but that obviously takes us all the way up to Grantham and Bourne and then all the way down to Market Deeping, let alone the bits I represent, if we add them all together, plus with Melton as well, we would still be 100,000 short of the target we have to hit. Now, as I say, that doesn't mean we shouldn't put forward an alternative, because we should have a voice in this where we can say what we think is best for us. But in terms of the sheer numbers, with the Vale of Bever, Melton, SKDC and everything, we end up short. And the additional complexities of this is, what does it mean for Melton being obviously in Leicestershire at the moment? What does it mean for SKDC, which is currently part of Lincolnshire? And the same way that we're proud of ourselves and our identity and our pride of place, there's similar feelings. So, if they go ahead with this, will we still be Rutland? I should say at this point the Lord Lieutenant said to give her apologies that she couldn't come. So according to government, I spent a lot of time looking into things that I never thought I needed to understand. Ceremonial counties only exist as counties for the purposes of having a Lord Lieutenant. That is the way it's defined in law. We've obviously had a Lord Lieutenant since 1559 and pretty much all the way through, apart from obviously when we lost it in 1974. And from a government perspective, ceremonial counties are defined in something called the Lieutenancies Act of 1997. Now, as we all know, in 1974, we lost our Lord Lieutenancy, and with that, we lost our ceremonial county status. There are currently no examples in the whole country of multiple ceremonial counties existing under one local government. It just doesn't exist. So I wrote to government, and I did a written question, which essentially which means the minister has to respond formally, legally sound, and essentially it's as if they were at the dispatch box. It just happens to be writing. And I said, what are you doing to look at ceremonial counties? What are you going to do to make sure Rutland doesn't lose its independence? And as you can see, their answer says, it won't directly impact the border of your ceremonial county. And then if you skip to the bottom in red, but if it does, we'll look at the implications. So my assumption of this is that the government hasn't given any thought yet to what this means for ceremonial counties. But it also tells me they can't promise that they'll protect our ceremonial county, which makes sense because of what we all know happened back in 1974. So from that, I went, OK, well, the government's not going to promise me they can protect us, so let's look at the legislative status to see if there's something I can get from that. So as I said, the Lord Lieutenancies Act in 1997 was created before Rutland was a unitary again. So when you open that act up, Rutland isn't listed as one of the places that has a Lord Lieutenancy, so that's the first problem for me. I have spoken to some experts today who've told me that Section 3B of the Act, which says any other areas in England which wish to have counties, ceremonial counties, as per the Local Government Act 1972. Now, fine, you can say that according to the 1972 Act, anyone that was a county in 1972 can have it, but it was the 1972 Act that scrapped Rutland as a county council and made us a district. So I'm essentially sat between different legal opinions at the moment that I need to get to the bottom of it. But the assessment still leaves me with the point that we, as a county, do not have any certainty that we will be able to protect being a ceremonial county. So going back to, it must have been 1974, the then Labour government minister gave this answer when they were asked in the chamber about, could we just have our ceremonial status, please, even if we've got to join Leicestershire? And as you can say, they said, it is not possible because you cannot be a ceremonial county if you do not have your own county council or some sort of council. So, therefore, if Rutland were abolished as a local government area, we would lose our Lord Lieutenancy and therefore we would lose our ceremonial status as Rutland. You can see why this worries me, and the lack of reassurances as yet worries me as well. But as I've said, there are some who are more optimistic than me, so we'll see. So in terms of how we protect our ceremonial status as Rutland, that for me is an absolute red line. It's just something I will fight for, and unless you all tell me that I'm mad and you want me to put down my battle axe, in which case I will. But I don't think we should be stripped of our identity. So in terms of the options that we have, ultimately this is all in the hands of the government. They can decide to protect our ceremonial status if they wish to do so, if we are forced to join Leicestershire County Council, and that is something we could campaign for. Option two, the government is going to have to pass legislation potentially to force us to merge if we refuse to merge, or for all sorts of other reasons, to do with elections, for example, postponing things like that. If that happened, I could lay an amendment as your MP that says, I want ceremonial statuses to be protected. Now, I've gone around the country over the last few weeks speaking to MPs of all sorts of different political colours. I can't find anyone else, unfortunately, who is looking at this problem, because that was my goal. If I can find lots of people who are saying, we're going to lose our ceremonial status, we can all work together. If I lay an amendment, I know Conservative MPs would vote for it. I would hope Lib Dem MPs would all vote for it as well. I don't know what would happen otherwise, and essentially I'd have to go around begging friends across other political parties like the SNP to vote, even though they don't normally on English matters, but it is an option. But then there's option three, which is essentially in the Lieutenancies Act, there is a sentence that says, Her Majesty may appoint lieutenants for any county or area. Now, area is the bit I'm interested in because we wouldn't be a county anymore. So could we ask the King to appoint a lieutenant just for Rutland? Now, the issue with that is it's not a Lord Lieutenant, so I don't know if a lieutenant on its own is enough to confer ceremonial county status, or if we just have someone who's very lovely who gets to go and do ceremonial things, but we lose our county status. Dr. Sarah Furness has very kindly written to the palace today with an initial response, which wasn't very helpful, but I'm hopeful we can work through it together. So these are the options that I think we currently have that potentially would allow us to protect our Lord Lieutenant, which is the way for us to protect our county status. You can see how much fun I've had with all of this. And Route 4, of course, is something I haven't considered. I'm hopeful one of you might come up with and tell me this evening that I've obviously missed, that was slapping me in the face. So just a reminder in terms of what's looking like our current options. One is join Leicestershire in a giant donut. Second is join Leicestershire, what I'm calling Leicestershire Local, which is two different unitaries in Leicestershire. The status quo or alternative proposal. And we'll have to see what we get to. So in terms of concerns, We talked about the loss of Sarah County, which I think is a pretty enormous one, but is essentially an issue of government will. The second one is the process and speed. So as I've touched on, district councils have been ignored. They haven't been given a single chance to have their say. And Rutland County Council's only really been given a say as an add-on to Leicestershire County Council. So this doesn't feel like a choice. It feels like it's being imposed. In terms of the limited engagement, that is why the current proposal sat with government is one giant donut, as if that somehow is representative of all of our views, when none of us have been given the chance to have it. The speed at which government is moving is not allowing that space of public discussion. It worries me how many people emailed me in Rutland saying, we had no idea about this at all until you sent an email saying you're holding a public meeting. That shouldn't be the way that things are done when they're going to affect all of you more than anyone else, when our bins are collected, how they're collected, what happens in the way our lives are working. And in terms of the future, as I said, there's very limited space for that meaningful engagement. So I have made a request of Leicestershire County Council that I think they should be holding public meetings. They should be going out and putting forward. If they want to propose that we move to one unitary model, they should be making that case to everyone. They should be making the case to Rutlanders as to why we should join Leicestershire and why it'd be different this time. As I touched on for the bigger, better fallacy, there is no proof that it's better. And I found a great quote from an academic who said, that the search for optimum size of council has proven to be as successful as the search for the Philosopher's Stone. And as a Harry Potter fan, I particularly enjoyed that quote, so I thought I'd put it in. But essentially, there are no consistent or conclusive results. I have read so many academic studies over the last few weeks, I cannot tell you. But also the cost of restructuring, rebranding, repopulating, ripping the signs out on our roads that say, welcome to Rutland, all of this stuff, it adds up. And so most academics have said that supposed advantages of the economies of scale and the bigger is cheaper argument actually are outnumbered by when councils work together across boundaries. So, for example, Rutland does outsource some of its areas, not actually as many as everyone thinks they do, but they do outside some, and that actually those combined functions are cheaper than reorganisations. Also, the other point I'd make is, if it was that much cheaper when you come together, why does it cost government a pound for every pencil when we could go buy a pencil each for 20p in a shop? We all know these things don't always work as they think. In terms of representation and our voice, accountability matters. What is going to be the focus of a new council if it's a giant donut? Will they care about our rural way of life? That's one of the things that I put in my promises to you when I stood to be re-elected, because it does matter. We have a very different life to many of the people across our country. Remote decision-making is a massive problem. So when I was representing Melton still, the fight I had to get the Melton Mowbray Distributor Road built, I cannot tell you how painful it was. And that's because Leicestershire County Council didn't have it as a priority and they didn't see it as a major priority, despite the fact that people of Melton had been promised it for 50 years. And the fight I had to have, and that remoteness, was nowhere near as big as what we're looking at potentially moving to. Stamford, the frustrations I hear constantly, they feel they're being milked for Grantham or for Lincoln, they're forgotten, they never get anything. It's true when you look at the figures, they don't get what they should be getting. But also, again, if you look at the academics, as soon as you move away from a smaller council, electoral turnout goes lower at councils because people go, oh, well, you know, public trust goes down, levels of engagement goes down, contact between citizens and councillors go down, identification or affinity with the council goes down, and also the number of councillors, and this doesn't benefit me to say it, so the number of councillors elected from just the major party, so Conservative, Lib Dem, and who am I missing, Labour, goes up. it's fine. But the point is, we have a lot of independents in Rutland. There are a lot of independents across Leicestershire as well. All the statistics show that when you move to a bigger model, people just vote for the colour because they don't know them and the issues aren't as local. As I said, I've touched on the councillors. The idea that we would go down to three councillors only is an extraordinary point. And that takes me to the question of how much was our voice listened to last time we were in Leicestershire. There's a reason why we left Leicestershire, and it was a good one. Last one is not... Oh, I haven't done quite in the right order. But anyway, equity and fair share. So I touched on the point about less representation. As I said, last time around, we didn't get our fair share. We've had the same problem with something called local enterprise partnerships. So we're part of the Cambridgeshire and Peterborough one. Then we left them and we joined the Leicestershire one and we still didn't get our fair share. Then we joined the Lincolnshire one. Most of you don't even know that we've been moving around, but essentially these are the organisations that are meant to be boosting productivity and prosperity from an economic perspective in our areas. The Lincolnshire LEP published this big glossy document about 3 weeks ago and they posted it to me. There wasn't one mention of Rutland in the entire document, despite the fact that we pay to be part of the LEP and we contribute funding for projects. All the money goes up to the north. So I think, for me, I have a real question about whether we get equity or fair share. Costs, we've got no idea of the costs, but the councils haven't been given any money for this work. So Rutland County Council's trying to do all this work to work out what is best for us and what to do and how to navigate and what cards do you want to hand when you walk into a poker game where the dealer knows exactly what you've got and isn't necessarily on your side. and they're having to do it all without any support. And then fair funding. None of this solves the problem of fair funding. The idea that an East Midlands mayoralty is going to get as much money as the West Midlands mayoralty is for the birds. The idea that Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland is suddenly going to get all this money unlocked. There is no evidence, there's no formula they've given us, there's nothing they've given us to prove that will happen. So how do we mitigate some of these concerns? Because my goal is always to try and find solutions. So in terms of which model we back, we've obviously got a lot of say about what we do on that. Well, we don't have a lot of say, but we can cause a lot of trouble and try to. We can put forward an alternative proposal. I think we can work hard to try and protect our Sarnia County. I personally, and I was really hard, I was writing this and I was trying to stay neutral, but I got more radicalised every second that I worked on this proposal. I think we need a referendum. If our proposal was really for Rutland to lose its independence, there should be a referendum of our communities. And if the government won't fund it, then I will ask RCC to find the funding for it, because I think it's important. I've worked out the cost of about £52,000, so it is a lot of money, but at the same time, it's about our future. We could ask for smaller divisions, so we could say, fine, if we've got to go into these two big Leicestershire, because I definitely don't want to go into one, then we demand that you have much smaller wards, and therefore we could end up with 9 councillors rather than just the 6. Again, we just have to fight for it and try and make that argument. And of course, we could also put as a red line that the council must have Rutland in its name. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it would protect our ceremonial status, but I know I cannot tell you how many arguments I get into with the NHS, police, Environment Agency, when they write to me as the MP for Rutland to give me an update. And for example, the Environment Agency says, here's your update for Northamptonshire and Lincolnshire. And it's got loads of Rutland stuff in it. And I reply going, you do represent Rutland as well. And they go, yeah, but we just don't put it in the name. Well, yeah, I have an issue with that. So in terms of the question of does it have to happen and do we have a choice, there was a lot of excitement after the 21st of January when the House of Commons, the minister said, the government is not requiring any area to reorganise. All we've done is write out and invite proposals to be submitted. So lots of people across the country, including the Local Government Chronicle and local councils, were ringing me going, oh, Alicia, yeah, we've misread the paper, wherever it is, the giant, you know, white paper, and maybe it's not going to be forced to us. But I go back to what the white paper says. And the white paper says, as it says here, the government will do this as quickly as we can, including through legislation where it becomes necessary to ensure progress. A later quote says, we will legislate for a ministerial directive, and that means that we can interfere where areas have not been able to make progress. That to me is very, very clear, that they will legislate if we refuse to take part and do as we're asked. And they have said in other interviews that no one council will be able to derail reform, because they are very concerned about that. So if we say we can't agree to devolution until local government reorganisation is settled, that does give us some negotiating power, but we're in a very difficult place. I had a long meeting with the leader of Harborough District Council about this earlier. So some of you may recognise the phrase, resistance is futile, and I think a lot of people feel that, but I'm not really one to accept that, as you may have learnt so far. So in terms of what next, it could be this Thursday that we hear whether or not local elections are being cancelled, and we'll get told whether we're on pathway 2 or not, which is essentially the one that means that we then have to put forward final proposals by March. Well, they're calling it interim proposals, but essentially, and then final one sorted by the summer. There's also going to be a Rutland County Council full council meeting that you can go to and give your views and speak at. I've asked Leicestershire County Council to publish the letter they sent to government saying what they wanted us to all sign up to, because I haven't had sight of it. And as a local MP, I was not told before this proposal went in that the proposal was for one giant donut. And then obviously my job is to try and keep you informed. And I promise you this is my last slide. So, essentially what I'm looking for this evening is your thoughts on what's been proposed for us. If we were to be subsumed, do you want one giant donut? Am I wrong on that? Do we want two? How do you think it should be best arranged? What do you think the red line should be? What should we be pushing for? You know, obviously there are red lines around things like councillor numbers, but also around council tax. There's all sorts of different things. Or do you just want us to refuse, do the status quo, fight as hard as we can, refuse, and me to be low-key and work out some very clever ways to delay as much as I can? I'm sorry that took me slightly longer to explain than I wanted to, but hopefully it gives you a start of a 10. And Amelia, who is my wonderful member of TAF, has got a microphone. So who would like to kick us off with a thought, comment, feedback? I can try and answer questions, but we'll see how I go.
Hi. I live in Ketton. I just want to know what difference would it make to me? And I know it sounds quite naive and a bit simple, but genuinely, what will I notice? What will the difference be?
So the difference, So as per some of the things I set out, so for example, in terms of who your counsellor is and how much of Rotten they represent, how much you can contact them, how much they can help, but also things like bins, for example, you all know that I've fought the council very hard over, well, you may not know, I've been fighting the council quite hard over the last few weeks about bin collections, because they want to move black bin collections every 3 weeks, not every 2 weeks. Now, obviously, food waste can be collected every week, but for people with nappies or elder loved ones who have hygiene needs, then that's a lot to put them through. It is much easier for us to fight as a small community to have your council listen and do what is right for you locally than imagine if I was fighting against all the other councils. Say when we're having a discussion about transport, we've just got a load of extra electric buses for Rutland, right? Really good, we're getting this investment, more buses are coming. Do you really think that in a big donut unitary, they're going to send any more buses to Rutland? Well, Ketton's got a bus cut that we can talk about separately. The R5 is a discussion you and I can have afterwards. But essentially, do we really think, when you look at the whole of Leicestershire, investment will go to Loughborough, it will go to the D2N2 corridor, and it will go to northwest Leicestershire where there's an industrial base. We are not going to get our fair share. There is no reason to believe if we go into one unitary, our council tax will go down. There is no requirement for them to equalise it across the whole of Leicestershire and Rutland. So, yes, that would have to be something that I would try and make a red line, and I'd fight with the council to do that, although MPs have been cut out of this process as well, so all I've got is my voice. But in terms of what that means for us, every decision that is currently made for you is not going to be about what is best for Rutland. It's going to be what is best for the whole of Leicestershire and Rutland, including the Leicestershire people who look to Birmingham. You know, some of my Leicestershire MP colleagues, I love them, but when we sit down, they're talking about Nuneaton and Birmingham. If I came in here and talked to you about Birmingham Nuneaton, you thought I'd lost my mind. But essentially every decision will not be about Rutland and our small community and what is right for us. Also adult social care. It's one of the main arguments why government says we need to change this, because they say small councils can't do adult social care. We are the number one council in the entire country for adult social care. Do I think adult social care will get worse if we go into a giant donut with the whole of Leicestershire? Absolutely, without question. Leicestershire doesn't have things like Admiral Nurses for dementia. We do. And we all get frustrated with Rutland County Council. That's the job of a council. You get irritated with your council. You want to kick and scream sometimes. But they're here in Oakham, and they are making decisions about us for our area. But also the fact that we got levelling up money. You know, the whole country went mad when we got the levelling up money. They were like, Rutland, those poshos, they don't need no money. We've got massive social mobility problems in our community. I can tell you now, when we're shoved into a big mayoralty, the idea that we need support for our poorest in Rutland to build up and to be able to get to where they need to, all the money's going to go to Leicester, because unfortunately, the way the funding model's done is on deprivation. So we will have less money coming to us, we will have less of a focus on us, less of a care for our issues, and a lot less of say. So I think actually, although hopefully most of you don't have to ring the council every week, if you did, good luck to you. And you have to drive, what, an hour to get there, have an argument with them, see if you can get anywhere. The whole model, and it is difficult, because if you're not having to talk to them all the time, you go, oh, well, you know, hopefully my council tax will go lower and it'll be a bit easier. But yeah.
I served as a councillor in 1972, and so I've been through all this before.
Just different faces.
And virtually nothing you've said tonight is original. The whole thing has gone full circle. I served with Beeston and Stapleford, and the obvious link, as far as we were concerned, if there was going to be reorganisation, was with Long Eaton, just as the obvious link for Eastwood was with Ilkeston, because they were colliery towns. But because the border between Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire fell between, we ended up with something that pleased absolutely nobody. But since that time, I've lived in fairly large unitary authorities. And before I came back to this part of the country, I lived in Bradford Metropolitan District. I could walk half a mile, and I would be in North Yorkshire. I could walk a couple of miles, I'd be in Lancashire. But the centre was in Bradford. And not only that, but the centre for a lot of the county organisations, such as Fire Service, were on the border of Leeds. And one of my best memories was, as the chair of the village hall, I had to renew the entertainment licence. And part of that was to get the fire service to come and certify the building as safe. And after a time, I rang them and said, well, when are you going to come and do this? And they said, well, Bean, but there was nobody there. So I said, well, there was nobody there because you didn't tell us we were coming. Well, we looked through the windows and it looked all right to us. And that was the level of support that we got. And I could quote you several others. And that's what you'll find. What you'll find is that peripherally, you will find it very difficult to get support from your local authority. Well, it's not local, is it? It's just the authority. And getting things approved and what have you will be extremely difficult. On the other hand, if you want to do something and not tell anybody, then I can promise you that you'll be amazed what you can get away with.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's got some good sides and some not so good sides, but overall, there aren't many good sides.
I'm not sure encouraging MPs to try and get away with things is a great point. But your point about 1974, Lucy Stevenson kindly lent me the Fight for Rutland books, everything else like that, and I read them and I went, oh my God, these are the same arguments I'm making. And then it made me question, have I missed something? Have times moved on? And they really are the same. But please, next person.
As this is all being driven by Angela Rayner, presumably she's based it on Andy Burnham's done in Manchester, how accountable will these units be and how will they be measured? I worry that they've become big and powerful and then we've got corruption and no means of checking on what anybody's doing with the money or whether things are being progressed. So is there a plan with it, with Rayner, that she's going to make people more accountable, that they will give them targets, that we can see what the targets are and we as residents in Rutland can see where people are in achieving the goals that are set, so we've got some basis of, you know, not being in a mushroom shed in the dark over here.
A mushroom shed in the dark. Yeah, another Leicestershire MP said to me, Rutland will be the mouse in a rowing boat with an elephant. And I went, oh, okay, I'd never heard that one before. So just actually going back historically, so the Conservative Party was fully behind the introduction of big mayoralties, but we said only where there is community consent, we weren't going to force local government reorganisation around it, and that's what we've done. So in some of the places where we have big mayoralties, so for example the West Midlands, it was fully welcomed, it was backed, obviously there was some opposition, but the councils backed it in the end and we didn't require any local government reorganisation. And I think that's one of the big frustrations when I have the conversations with district leaders. They say to me, why can't they just do what you lot did, which is, yes, fine, bring a mayoralty, which happens to work very well, as I've said, in some areas it works, because there were conversations about us having a mayoralty here under my government, and I said to them, I'm not happy or comfortable with that, but let's have a discussion, obviously, because we've got to put it to the public. But district leaders are saying to people, why can't they just follow that model, where, fine, bring in a mayoralty, but don't mess around with the local government underneath them, let them do their jobs, and let those mayors just focus on essentially investment and kind of really, really big issues where you've got to have some cross-reaching. So in terms of accountability, obviously they're elected, and we would all get to elect them every 5 years or whatever the period of term was. Beyond that, we don't have any detail at all at the moment, but I would assume that it's just the exact same as the other mayoralties. So essentially, local elections would happen, and that would be that. We'd all vote once every 5 years for our Leicestershire and Rutland ideally named council, and mayoralties, and that's it. And look, it is true, mayoralties are a step change away from... So MPs, obviously, you hear everything we say and we do because we do it in the chamber and it's all recorded and you know what we're up to. Mayoralties are obviously different because there isn't that same level of accountability. But at the same time, you know, look in London, and it's the same in Tees Valley, and I presume it's the same in the other two, you do have the county council have the mayor come and give evidence. So essentially, like select committee hearings, where the mayor has to come and answer to the county council. Not answer to, but essentially explain themselves. So I don't know at the moment what a strategic authority, which is language that we always said we shouldn't use because we didn't want those powers given, what the exact mechanisms would be. But yes, there'd be elections, and I would assume they would do the same thing with county councils being able to hold them to account in some way. Although the county councils don't really have powers over them, they can just verbally hold them to account. Although, as you've seen with select committees and government, parliament, you can do quite a lot just by holding people to account. But essentially, I don't know yet. And maybe we'll find out in this letter this week, or maybe we'll have to wait for a bit more. But I can't give you more than that.
Would I be right in assuming nationally these proposals are going to affect rural areas more than urban areas? And you mentioned part of the driver is to get housing built. Would I be right in assuming that there is a high likelihood of housing targets being pushed into rural areas which lack the infrastructure to support the development?
So on the first, I can say yes, at least because some of the most urban areas in this country have already done this, so also there's a few of them left. But I think yes, without question. And the problem is, as soon as you say that you only want to have around 10 mayors for a country, you're automatically focusing and forcing the focus on a city-centric-led model. In terms of housing, the Minister's been very clear this about housing. Rutland's already had our housing targets doubled, so good luck to us now. Our five-year land supply's gone, so we've got every property speculator in the world looking at Rutland going, isn't that beautiful and lovely, and wouldn't it be great to build another 75 houses here or there? But the same has happened to Stamford, the same has happened to Harborough, and what's really frustrating for those of you who haven't seen my Facebook, where I seem to bang on about this relentlessly, is that Lincoln, Nottingham, Peterborough and Leicester have all seen their housing targets reduced by the government, and we have seen ours doubled. Every rural area that I have looked at across the country has had theirs increased. Some have had worse than doubling, so I think we've had the worst, like third or fourth worst increase in Rutland. But the fact that they did that while reducing the official requirements of cities, to me, is unforgivable, not least when I know Leicester has got 1,000 empty properties at this current moment, let alone their brownfield sites, let alone the old factories that should all be being converted. And this is why I held a big public meeting in Harborough about 4 months ago, because Leicester City essentially has paid Harborough District Council a load of money to allow Leicester to build the housing need it already wasn't meeting in the Harborough villages. And obviously that, for me, was a big issue. So, yes, there is no question to me that this is about it. And that is also why Peter Salisbury has said that he needs Leicester to be bigger and to expand the borders of the city, because then you get more council tax, more business tax, but also, most of all, you can build a whole ton more houses to meet your needs and, again, then bring up the revenue that's coming in. So house building is most certainly at this, because obviously they want to build 1.5 million homes.
That was actually my question. But being more specific about St George's and Woolfox, you know, are we going to have Angela Rayner just, you know, riding roughshod over public opinion and building there?
So I'm not an expert in planning, because as you all know, that I'm not meant to do that. I almost tend to turn to Karen and make her answer this question. But the only way that that would ever become a decision made by Angela Rayner would be if there was some kind of calling in process by the government on it. I don't think that's likely to happen. I'm going to look at Karen and check that I'm... No? That's a good point. There's no plans currently to build in either of those places. But no, the only reason Angela Rayner would ever get involved is if something was called in. So a bit like the Chinese embassy in London, you know, that should be, again, even though it's a foreign embassy, that's a decision of Tower Hamlets Council. We'll all hold our opinions of Tower Hamlets Council. But the government has chosen to call it in, and now it's Angela's decision. I think it's highly unlikely to see decisions like that called in. Highly unlikely. They only really get involved when there's a big problem. But the mayor, if we got to strategic authority level, yes, the mayor would be making decisions like that. The mayor would be the one saying, this is, I've now designated this beautiful area of made-up village as a priority building spot. You know, that's what they would do. They would have the ability to do that, which is why when civil servants kept pushing us to do this, because Neil O'Brien, next door MP, he was a minister at MHCLG, they kept pushing for us to give strategic authority powers to mayors, and we kept saying no, because we didn't think it was right for mayors to make the decisions around where housing goes. It should be with county councils. Unfortunately now, the new government has decided they will give those strategic authority powers for housing to the new mayors. So that's a big concern. But again, that's what they have been saying. We haven't had it in writing. So I can cross my fingers and hope that's not going to be the case, but that is currently what we're being told. As I say, it's all changing day by day. Who's next? What do you want me to do? What are your worries? What do you not want, please, sir? Because I worry I won't be able to answer all the questions. It's not my...
Okay, so I might be one of the few voices in the room that's actually going to be in favour of it. So,
please.
I, having been an ex-Rutland County Councillor and currently work for a national charity who works with 67 different authorities, including combined authorities, I think you might be underestimating the benefits. So if we turn back the clock, yes, when it was Rutland County Council, it wasn't unitary, they still had the boroughs. The idea of this is you go to a single tier. So you can't compare what we achieve as a unitary authority on things like adult social care with what Leicester are, because they actually don't have a unitary authority. They are a county council. So they don't have the same resources, so it is going to be different. You can't compare the two. You're actually pulling something together that does have the potential of delivering better service. The downside, I will agree, is the housing. And that is the biggest downside to all of this, as far as control over that, and it's about local democracy. But I think we have to make some choices of, if we want better services, we might have to actually sacrifice some of our democratic sort of ability for the very local bit. And if younger people want the opportunity in the services, actually we might be better off all going together. So I think we'll be careful what we fight against.
So my only challenge for you with that is that going around the country, though, the amount of smaller unitaries, so for example, like us in social care, look, we're not the best at children's services, for example, you know, we're not really the best at everything. But when you go around the country, when I spoke to colleagues about who they have got smaller unitaries, quite a few of them are rating in the top five consistently. So this is my only challenge, but in terms of the argument that bigger always means better.
But you're now talking about unitaries.
Yeah.
And that's my problem with the comparison you did. Yeah. I have no problem with unitaries. And actually, if you have the right sized unitary, you will actually be really effective.
So which size would you rather have? Which one do you want?
I probably wouldn't go for the donut. I probably would split it down to slightly smaller. But the donut will work as well. You want to fight against having Leicester City in it for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
You will end up there from a combined authority point of view, and you will end up with it being skewed towards that. But again, if you can get the unitary bit sorted first, you will have a bigger say in any strategic authority. So get that bit right, and you'll have a lot better actual ability to sculpt where policy's going. It's then up to everybody in this room to elect the right people. Three people saying the right thing can be more effective than 27 all over the place.
To just challenge you on that, though, I feel like the three people in Parliament at the moment, because it's essentially 100 of us versus 400 of them, and my voice is not being heard. That's what I said to you about if I tried to push an amendment to say they had to put it to ceremonial status. Realistically, if the Labour government says they're not backing me, it doesn't matter if I get every other MP, if I beg all my friends to vote for me.
But that is democracy.
It is democracy.
You know, and it's up to us to make sure who go there. Because it isn't just about, if it's Leicestershire, there's plenty of other rural areas, you actually get the right cluster together, you will get the right decisions. So it is actually about us as a community actually electing the right people. It's our problem to get that bit right.
Yeah.
The structure, we can go down rabbit holes, and in actual fact, fighting to keep Rutland could be one of the worst things that we do.
Interesting. Go on, next question. There was a judgment in red. Let's clap for everyone, not just some.
Hello.
Evening.
I live in West Lyne, unlike the lady from Catton. What does it mean for me? My village won't change its name. Rutland won't change its name. I love where I live. Our biggest thing is flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Affects 1,200 of us within the village. I have absolutely no faith that Rutland County Council will ever sort that out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hopeful that a larger local authority will be able to do that for us. Having been in business for many years, there are economies of scale, as long as you make sure you get the right deal and you have better buying power to be able to buy those in. I would dispute that some of the decisions that are made here in Rutland are for Rutlanders, because we share facilities with South Caerstephan, Peterborough City Council, Leicestershire, that aren't always for Rutland. I'll give you an example. I'm a self-employed taxi driver a couple of days a week. The licensing for those is being done by Peterborough City and Rutland. All the taxi firms have written to Rutland County Council to highlight the problem that they are going to impose a Peterborough City licensing on Rutland, almost of a black cab type thing. We're a rural community. Rutland loses its identity, but it's just one small thing. For me, I don't care who delivers the services. The half, the east or west, would be good for us because it is rural. They understand our problems. The bins will still get emptied. Our elderly will still be looked after. Our kids will be looked after. Education still will be delivered, whoever does it, because they're statutory services. Like the gentleman over here, just because the government wants this to happen doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing.
Mm.
As long as we get it right, it can be a good thing for us. I just want someone to sort our flooding out. Thank you.
So on flooding, you and I can have a whole other separate conversation about that. But, for example, I've got residents in other areas who are just as angry, who live in others in other places. The one thing I would say, when you said we'd still be Rutland, we wouldn't be, though. That is the point. We would no longer have that ceremonial status. So you wouldn't drive into signs that say, welcome to Rutland. Our flag would not be flown. You know, there are meaningful implications in terms of that. Obviously, I'm saying if that happens, I will fight for that because it matters inherently to all of us. But that is a meaningful change to how we live our lives and how we identify and pride of place, which does matter. And I would want to see people going to Leicestershire County Council with a strong voice, not three or six, because, yeah, I've seen, unfortunately, what happens when you're a small voice. Next. You.
First of all, thank you for a very concise summary.
It wasn't very concise. I'm well, sorry.
I found it concise. I can't remember half of it, but I can remember the other half. But thank you very much. One of the points that you raised was the possibility, you thought, of a referendum.
Mm.
And you did an estimate that that would cost £52,000. How likely is that to occur? Would that be discussed in the council meeting in early February as a possibility? Because it would be interesting to see cross-section area, all the different opinions going on, and there are some very valid fors and against. But it would be nice to know what the general populace thought of the whole idea. But lastly, would it count for anything?
And that's the thing. So I remember I was talking, some of my Leicestershire colleagues were saying they wanted to hold a referendum. And I said to them, just so you're aware, I think the outcome will be that people want this, and we're talking about a certain issue within the referendum. And I said, you know, so the point of a referendum is not so we can say 100%, you know, because I know the outcome's going to be. I think we've all learned, don't assume what you think the outcome of a referendum's going to be because you're a better person than me. So in terms of when it would happen, that all depends on what we get in this letter this week. So if we get told we're pathway two, we've got to have a proposal by March and then autumn's the next deadline, I would presume that we would want to try and do one between March and autumn. Now, Rutland County Council has the power to hold referendums. They've done it before on other things. So I would be asking Rutland County Council to do it because I don't believe the government's going to do it. But who knows? They could come back to me because I put this written question in and say, do you know what? We've decided to put some money in a pot. We're going to allow referendums to happen. This is when in the process we're going to do it. And we're going to do it. So in which case, that would be fabulous, and we can crack on from there. But I do think there's something about referendums rather than public consultations. But also, we'd have to have a very clear question. At the moment, we don't know what that question is. Is the question, do we want to join Leicestershire, yes or no? Is the question, do you want to keep your ceremonial status because you're joining Leicestershire anyway? So it's early days, but do I think it's really important that we don't just end up in a place where, at the very end, there's a consultation on mayoralties, but nothing on local government reorganisation? I feel quite passionate about that. But again, you may say, actually, do you know what, can you save the 50 grand and that might pay for something else to happen in Rutland? So yeah, so I assume that we'd probably want it between March and autumn, but if we're not put on pathway two, then we've got a lot more time to really work through this and make sure there's meaningful public consultation by Leicestershire County Council and Rutland County Council and everyone else. So I can't give you an exact, but those are two kind of scenarios that I'd be thinking.
Again, thank you for your presentation. Do you think, in the end, that change is absolutely inevitable? And should we, although it was touched on several times, status quo, and knowing the emotions of many people in Rutland, we would like to keep Rutland as it is. Do you think that's completely unrealistic? And it would be a shame, perhaps, to waste too much effort. Whilst we succeeded twice in the past to retain our county standard, do you think there is even the faintest chance of it being possible, or is it inevitable that we get change, in which case should we be concentrating on what we want and trying to get the best we can rather than trying to waste too much effort, albeit we look back in the past how much we've succeeded and we got the county status back. Is it almost inevitable that we're going to lose it, in your view?
So this is the exact conversation that I've been having with all the district council leaders and obviously also with the leaders of Rutland County Council. In this game, do we just need to keep our feet in all the different camps? Do we say, no, this is our position and we're going to go down fighting for it? Because Harbour District Council, for example, they've said, no, this is our position, we will go down fighting for it. And that's great, because I know what their steer is and I know what my inbox very clearly. We did a petition about the city extension and we had thousands within 24 hours saying, you will not put us in the city. So I've got a clear steer there from the two of them. In terms of resistance being futile, I imagine we've been told that every time. I imagine every single time Rutland's independence has been up for doubt, we've been told you've got no chance, don't give up. And reading the case for Rutland from 1974, people were writing in the national newspapers of Kenya and Zimbabwe and New York and all these places about Rutland's independence. I had a phone call from Telegraph yesterday. They've had at least, they said around 10, but a minimum of 5 letters every single day for the last 2 weeks from Rutlanders saying how angry they are about this and how much they want to fight it. So the question then is actually, and that's why I'm holding these public meetings, some of you will say, quite possibly, I want to join a unitary, with Leicestershire, but I want to keep our ceremonial status. And that, Alicia, is your job to go and fight for. Some of you will say you are to fight for us to protect our county council because we want to keep accountability local and everything else. That's what I'm trying to judge by holding these meetings. And some of you will say, no, just crack on, let's lose our independence and also let's lose our county as well and let's just completely subsume into Leicestershire. Now, that one I'm not really hearing from my inbox. But that's what I want to judge, because ultimately I think I'm the only person that hasn't really got a dog in this race, except for essentially my identity of who I am, where I live, because I'm not a councillor. So I'm not fighting to protect my job. If we stop being Rutland, I will still represent us, Leicestershire, East South, or whatever we become renamed as. So it doesn't really make a difference to that job. So that's the question. What do you want me to fight for? Is it protecting our ceremonial status and our county council? Is it just protecting our ceremonial status and we join, and then which model do you want? That's what we need to rethink about as a community. And those are the questions that I've been trying to come to a conclusion of, so that we can then come together as a community.
From my personal point of view, my main concern is representation. And I think, you know, there's probably a lot of people feel the same. But with another hat on, I don't think we should underestimate what Rutland actually stands for and the ceremonial status of Rutland. The visitor economy is really important to Rutland. It brings in around £170 million to the county a year. We have 1.5 million visitors. And that's really important. You know, Rutland is the smallest county in England. Our county motto, multum in parvo, much in little, really is what we are all about. And there are so many businesses within our county that really rely on that. And I fear if we lose the Rutland name and the ceremonial status, then that will affect the desirability of the area from a visitor economy point of view and tourism. So that's just my personal reflection on it, and it's just a statement, really.
And I'll make a slightly glib comment that I shouldn't really. We've either got to clap everyone or no one. But someone wrote a paper this week, and I'm being really naughty because obviously I do represent Leicestershire as well, and I love our harbour villages. But our motto is much in little, Leicestershire's is always the same. And there is quite a difference, I would argue, in those two mottos. But then I also love the Leicestershire flag, which took 1,000 years to get, but we got there in the end. But please go on. Hello, my friend.
I'm Sinclair Rogers from Ketton. The history of reorganisation of local government is messy. In 1974, the Conservative government abolished county boroughs, which was a great loss to many cities and towns in the country. When the referendum was held for Rutland to be reinstated as a county, the villages in the east of the county did not have a vote because they had a PE postcode. And there is a view in the east of the county that Rutland stops 200 yards to the east of Oakham. Not all is well in the way that Rutland is run. I think it's wrong to place too much emphasis on the benefits that come from Rutland County Council. It is, in my view, too small and should no longer exist. It needs to be a much bigger authority with more professional staff that would not be employed on a part-time basis, often not even living in the county. So I think we need to be very careful how we actually see the way ahead. And I would not rely on us hoping that Rutland County Council, in its present size, could continue.
And Sinclair, which model would you rather go to? Is it Giant Donut? Is it East-West? Is it North-South?
East-West.
East-West.
East-West. I think otherwise we'd be linked with Loughborough, which doesn't really fit.
It seems you've united the room around that comment. Right, who would like to make a reflection next, please, sir?
Yes, mine's just a very quick one, just following on from yours, and just for a little bit of humour. In about 15 minutes, I'm about to get up and walk across the road to the Rutland Big Band rehearsal, and our great speech is, we're the biggest band in the smallest county. And I'll just leave it with you with that.
Here you go.
Thank you. I'm Martin. I would like you to put some emphasis on your first proposal, Rutland. What I was thinking, I was speaking to somebody at the back here, has already been said. We have discovered Rutland. Whenever I visit places, I say I come from Rutland, and there's always an interest. If I said I came from Leicester, they go, ugh. You know, honestly, Leicester doesn't have a good reputation. I don't know the answer. We have a county council which has its issues, no money. It seems to have most of its services subcontracted to other councils from Corby, Northamptonshire, everywhere. So something's got to be done, but I don't really know what the answer is, but I would like the protection of Rutland. Ceremonial.
Yeah, ceremonial. On that, I mean, the one thing I would say is, as the only MP in the country who represents three counties, and I might turn to Jack or Michael here from Harborough, tell me how popular Leicestershire... I know it's different, because it's obviously got two tier, but tell me how popular Leicestershire County Council is in Leicestershire. Yeah, tell me how popular Lincolnshire County Council is in my South Stephen constituency. I can tell you it's not. And that's the thing. Look, there are major difficulties with local councils. You know, our councils do incredible work, and they're paid pittance for what they do. But yes, but that point around ceremony is really helpful. Lucy, just to clarify, how many services do we actually subcontract? Because I get told quite often we subcontract over half. So there are two services that we subcontract. So actually, if you think about all that a unitary does, that's not that many. But I just put that on record because people post up my Facebook all the time. And they're like, what does RCC actually do? Because they subcontract everything. And I never know the exact answer. But now I do know the exact answer. Who would like to give a reflect? Oh, please, sir, sorry.
Just one comment on the ceremonial. I believe that the Isle of Wight is also a ceremonial county and also well below the 300,000 limit, so they may be facing similar challenges. And we always ought to remember that at high tide, they are sometimes called smaller than ourselves.
So I remember a few years ago that I was asked to be the MP, if I was stand to be the MP for Isle of Wight, and my husband said to me, it's the one place in the country you're not allowed to be the MP because I'm not having you stuck on an island miles away. So I spoke to the Isle of Wight MP about this yesterday because just like you, I was like, the Isle of Wight, I know there's a big conversation about essentially merging the whole of Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, and all sorts of other complicated places. I don't know that part of the world at all. But actually, no, the Isle of Wight would be allowed to keep its own unitary authority for the Isle of Wight. It would just come under a bigger strategic authority under the others. So this is the part of the problem, is that they think we're so, so small that we can be kind of dealt with, whereas the Isle of Wight, also because it's got its own island, I mean, I know during the pandemic quite a lot of people wrote to me asking me to build a wall, but we technically don't have a wall around us. Frustratingly, that was one of my people that I called going, you can help me with this fight, can't you? We can fight together. But the Isle of Wight has got no question that they'll keep their ceremonial status no matter what, because they'll keep their unitary.
Hi. Just a quick word on the Lord Lieutenancy. If we lose a Lord Lieutenant, we lose a major voice of the county. Full stop.
Yeah.
And I think if we could have a big, efficient unified area, that would probably work. But, you know, history says they just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and it no longer is efficient. Yeah. Simple. And the numbers don't stack up. If we go into a big unit with three votes, we're always going to be outvoted.
Yeah. And actually, we'd lose the High Sheriff as well, because although it's a judicial, it's still the same concept. But yes, I had no idea that our entire identity was broken on us having a Lord Lieutenant or not. But I think it is important. You know, people often are reluctant to have an MP come to something because I'm seen as inherently political, which obviously technically I am. That's why I'm voted to be political neutral. It's really important to have someone like a Lord Lieutenant because it's that neutral civic role. But then if we're not Rutland, we don't need one, because we're just part of Leicestershire, so we'd have the Leicestershire Lord Lieutenant, of course, who I'm sure would come just as frequently to Rutland as they would come to anywhere else within the rest of Leicestershire. But yes. Who would like to come next? Oh, please, sir.
Thank you very much indeed. Quite a few people have mentioned history. And I just think, if you look at Germany in the 1930s, this is exactly where they started. They started getting rid of the small boroughs. They started putting larger ones together. They eventually stopped having elections altogether.
All the academic research shows the further a council gets away from the people it represents, the less representative it is. And it's interesting, actually, because my husband was saying to me on the way here, if you asked everyone in the room to put their hand up and say who thinks we should have fewer MPs, you'd probably find every single, in fact, almost every person in the room would probably put their hands up. But realistically, we've just had to do a boundary review because I was serving 110,000 people and my friend Chris Bryant, a Labour MP in Wales, was serving 65,000 people. It is what we don't want. In my opinion, the worst thing you could do is have fewer MPs and bigger constituencies, because you wouldn't see me doing my shopping in the co-op and wherever else it was. You wouldn't have me fighting on issues like bins, which a lot of MPs actually refuse to fight on issues like bins because they're like, it's a local council issue, I'm not getting involved. the further we remove people from their local communities. When I go and speak to my fellow, I got a text this morning from a Spanish MP, all my fellow colleagues around Europe, parliamentarians, think my Twitter, my Facebook in particular, is ridiculous. Because they're like, why do you go from tweeting about the fact that Rwanda's just invaded the Democratic Republic of Congo to tweeting about bins or having a surgery where you're talking about potholes? I shouldn't be talking about potholes, because again, it doesn't really fall in my brief. However, that's what happens when you move away. And you know, my colleagues in Germany who serve 400,000 people, they've never door knocked. They will never door knock. And that's really important in terms of hearing from people. It does make a difference in terms of what your politicians, when they are then sent off to a unitary, fight for and what they focus on. Because if they represent massive communities, it's quite easy to not be held to account. Whereas I know when I walk around Rutland that you guys are going to stop me in the street and say, hey, 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 let's go on. I try and draw a line at the school gate because I'd like to just be able to drop my kid off on my own. But it does matter, that distance. And the more we distance politicians from the communities they serve, the more likelihood that we have corruption. That, for me, is a genuine concern, because you have worse democracy and worse outcomes for communities because you're not held accountable, because you're not as local, and you don't have to get involved with local issues as much. But all of us on the face of it would say, yeah, great, fewer MPs, save some money. You know, a lot of them are not worth the space, they're brute, or whatever the phrase would be. But anyway, sorry, whose hand was next? Please, sir.
Hello. You haven't mentioned much about devolution of power from Westminster.
Yeah.
There is going to be quite a lot of devolution of power from the Secretary of State in terms of major issues that at the moment they can have a centralised say.
Yeah.
I think devolution is the thing that I find attractive by the whole proposal.
So I think, as I said, most councils in this country would say they want more devolution, without question. They'd all say, great, devolution, we're keen on more power, more resources. There will still be, however, those big Westminster decisions, of course, when it comes to big planning things, or things like Mallard Pass. I'm not sure that will be left to mayoralties. I think it will come up, but we just don't know. But yes, devolution, there's a lot of reasons to think it will bring more money, it will work. The challenge is, we know devolution works in urban models. There's a lot of questions and challenges around how does it work where you've got really rural areas, and particularly ones where we get left because you've got vast waves of an area that doesn't have a big industrial complex or something else going on. But that doesn't mean there aren't great opportunities. I do struggle, however, when I look at devolution to go, when someone sat down with a map as a mayor of Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, if we're lucky enough that it's that small and not East Midlands, it's going to go, yeah, that stretch of rurality there, that Rutland kind of area, they don't need much, do they? They're going to focus on the big centres. Now, I might be completely wrong, and in 6 years' time, you and I can sit down and you'll be like, see, look, Rutland got all this money and we got all this investment and everything else. But that's my challenge, is that I think devolution, there are opportunities, but as I've said, we've seen it work really well. Andy Street, Andy Burnham, they've nailed it. They've done a really, really good job. Teesside as well, amazing job. Reopened airports, doubled the amount of planes coming out of them. But in other areas, we have not seen any form of success. Now, of course, that's down to the mayor as well. Let's not pretend it's not down to the person they elect. But there are, when I sit with my district councils, they say to me, show me the data that proves it can work in a rural area. And they're the experts. They know more than I do about it. But it's a difficult one.
It does sound like your ideas and your mind is made up.
Well, my mind's made up. I've never been popular on mayoralties. I've always been open about that for years. I'm not quite certain about them. But I haven't got my mind made up because I don't know if we're going to end up with an East Midlands mayoralty. I don't know if we're going to end up with a Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland mayoralty. I don't know what the options are yet. But I know I'm very sceptical. Without question, I'll be quite open about that. I always have been. But we don't know what the offer is. And that's what the leader of district council said to me today. He said, how are you asking me to put forward a proposal and back a proposal when you have shown me no evidence that coming together as one big donut is going to bring more money to us? That's their frustrations. They're saying, don't ask us to make decisions without data, which I think is a perfectly valid position for them to take. Please, Adam.
Thank you. Obviously, having a louder voice, more people, and keeping our Rutland identity are vitally important. It seems to me that on the bigger picture, with 42,000, we're going to end up a small cog in a much bigger thing anyway, whether we like it or not. What I was thinking of is what is up for grabs and what isn't. And it just occurred to me, that this mayoral thing, whatever it is, whether the structure for that has already been agreed or whether there's potential for further devolvement within it of budgets and power and just using the full mayoral thing for economies of scale. So whether we can still have devolved decision-making to Rutland within a bigger organisation, but just make sure that we use the HR and all the other economies that come with a bigger organisation.
So some of your question goes to my point about mitigation. You know, what do we say? Okay, this is happening. What are the red lines? You know, what do we try and really push for? But the idea of some services still being delivered from Rutland or devolved to Rutland, at the moment, that's not on the table. So that would be either an alternative proposal we would put forward. I mean, there's quite a possibility that in a giant brand new donut unitary, they say, do you know what, we're going to keep an in-touch office in Rutland. Good luck to them with the cost of that building in terms of having something that's just small there for us to drop by. But it's possible they could say, we want it to feel local to people, so we're going to have a few offices in different places so people at least not have to travel all the way. That, again, is something we could try and push as a mitigation. But in terms of devolved powers, no. At the moment, what's on the table is that we lose them altogether because they get part of the big unitary, and therefore we would gain from the benefits of being part of the big unitary, but then also you don't have any local devolved decision making.
It was just a question of whether that level of decision about what that model looks like has been made and whether that is still influenceable. So from
we may find out on Thursday that it's a whole lot less influenceable than we think it is.
Okay.
But my view is that this is why I'm holding... I mean, some people said, why are you holding this meeting so early in the process? And I said, because the process is moving at a speed, you know, we don't have time to wait around till March and go, oh, well, this is the final proposal that's gone to government and therefore that's what we want to do. So I think we have to try and shape it as much as possible now. And the districts are up for that. You know, Rutland County Council is up for that. We're thinking, how can we be innovative? How can we push for things, whether it's council numbers or whether it's certain ways or, you know, red lines on our council tax has to be equalised across the whole of Leicestershire, you know, different things like that. Can there be certain services that are protected? How do we make sure that, for example, could we put like a Barnett consequential formula kind of thing into funding where we say, you know, for when money is allocated across the whole of Leicestershire and Rutland, Rutland has to get its fair share so it's not milked for money. You know, it's difficult, but those are the kind of things that we need to work out. Are those the things we're going to push for as red lines or, for example, ceremonial status?
Yeah. I just would like to go back to the housing situation, which you mentioned before. With the housing quota gone up by 166% in Rutland, and you did mention that a number of houses are still unsold, which is obviously true. I mean, in Ketton, Uppingham and Oakham, some of the houses are still unsold after 2 or 3 years of just being built and empty. I would like to say that, having been in the property market, I do know that Rutland does have a problem with housing, particularly at the lower level of younger people wanting to live in the county. The infrastructure is not there for their transport, and they then find they have to drive a considerable mileage for employment. And this is a very rural area, and that costs them a great deal. If we're going to get a huge housing quota for Rutland, I'm just very concerned, and I think Rutland should be, that these houses are not going to be suitable for the younger people, particularly, to be able to afford and to be able to then travel long distances to big community centres, which is the ever-increasing costs, without public transport suitable.
So your point on affordable housing is absolutely right, and this is something that worries me a lot. And you can imagine, I go and visit schools and someone says to me, you know, my children are just about to turn 21, they think they can't come back to Rutland. It is a big issue. There's going to be a lot more housing. Affordability will be a requirement as part of that. But there's other types of housing we don't have enough on. You know, Karen and I had a meeting today about what do we do for adults with severe disabilities. People want their children to be able to grow up locally, but even if they can't keep them home anymore. There's a lot of things we need to deal with, but because we don't have a 5-year land supply and because there's so many proposals coming forward, I think we will see more affordable housing, but also we need it. And on the public transport side, obviously every house you build, you get SIL money, but we have to be honest, when you live in... So we have the highest car use of any county in the country, and that's because we have 50 villages. And the reality is that there are many buses that I've gone and sat on where nobody gets on or off apart from me. And that costs a lot of money to subsidise as a county council. Now, we got £6.5 million to bring in to invest in our bus services from government. Again, something said we'd never get for Rutland, we got it. It's not straightforward, it's really complex. But the point is well made that we need to make sure we create the best possible environment for young people to stay here and not leave the county.
Mine is just a quick point. There's been some very good comments today, and thank you for holding the meeting. I just wanted to make an observation on the process and the timescales. I have been asking people since I became aware of this issue over the last few days from the Facebook page that almost nobody I've spoken to knows about any of these proposals and what is going on. And I think there's a real trust issue at the moment within the county. I think this feels like it's coming in through the back door because it wasn't in the manifesto. Also, listening to what you said tonight, it feels to me that this is happening, whether we like it or not. And therefore, having a referendum feels like a democratic way of going about it. But given the timescales that we have, I wonder if the money is best saved and put into something that would benefit the county or whatever the boundaries are going forward. Because two things, there isn't enough time to get information out there to inform people to make a proper decision in the referendum. Therefore, people tend to vote emotionally. And secondly, it feels as if it's going to be a waste of time anyway. And I think perhaps it would be, my feeling is better to get some information about what the possibilities are and what the potential outcomes are of a changed authority than fighting just to retain the existing authority when I feel that that's gone. And secondly, I think the gentleman who made a very good point about local businesses and the importance of the identity of the county or the area. There are so many start-up businesses now, which I think is fantastic, which have Rutland in the name, great innovations coming on, and it would be a shame to lose those, and we need to do something to protect those unique identities within the county. Are there any other places we can look, for example, Huntingdon or Huntingdonshire, where the county identity can be retained for the soft benefits, even if we can't retain the structures?
I have a real interest in Rutland businesses, having lived in the county nearly all my life, and I now work for the Rutland Chamber of Commerce, and that came through from Lincolnshire. One of the things I was very clear about when it was started was it had to be called the Rutland Chamber of Commerce, because we're passionate about Rutland, let's be honest. And one of the things I think that we can do as a community, if this is going to be done unto us, which I suspect it will be, is to actually knit Rutland together in a way that they can't break. And that's through our businesses, that's through our sports clubs, that's through our schools, it's through everything we do. You know, we've got 3,500 SMEs in Rutland, and there's some fantastic businesses doing some amazing things. And if we can get behind them, we can all join together, we can make a real difference, because I don't think we've got a chance of being able to stop this from being done unto us. But Rutland needs to fight for its identity. One thing I did question is there an opportunity at some point in the future when they're deciding on who's going to be mayor that it's rotated round the three areas or whatever, so Rutland has a chance of having a mayor for 5 years? Just a thought.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so I did actually come back to your referendum. It was a really good challenge because we don't want to do things just to make the point. But could it potentially be armour in our arguments about what needs to happen next? I don't know. And that's why I haven't said to the council, you know, we must and you must at this point, because we just don't know where we are. So it's a really good challenge. Before we wrap up, first of all, can I say thank you to all of you for caring to come along. Local government reorganisation, I know, is not the sexiest of topics that you expect to spend your evening talking about. Can we just do a really quick few straw polls? So how many of you, is it a red line that we should protect the ceremonial status? Now, that doesn't mean the county council, but just Rutland as we are. When you drive in, it says welcome to Rutland, even if we don't have a county council. Okay, I'm going to take it as almost unanimous. Almost, right. How many of you think we should push for the status quo, no matter what? How many of you who voted against that, just for interest, is because you think we haven't got a shot at fighting? That's interesting. Okay. How many of you would rather move into, if we get put into Leicestershire, to have two unitaries rather than just one big donut? Okay. How many would you rather just one big donut? I'm sorry, I have to keep calling it the donut. Nobody wants that. Okay, fine. So essentially, obviously, it's up to you having come this evening, but my goal is, as we move through this process, I will do more of these so that we can get your views as the process keeps going. And by then, hopefully, by at some point, quite soon, we'll know a lot more information. But can I just say thank you to everyone? I really, really appreciate you coming along, for challenging some of the points I'm thinking about and for giving me a steer. I'm obviously holding another meeting next Monday, and then we will go from there. But thank you all ever so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great evening. Oh, and